I think as a leader, there's a quote that I often think about that really is a great way to think about just leadership in general. And it's, your capacity to grow determines your capacity to lead. Mm.
This is the Made to Advance podcast. I'm your host, Brian Ollick. We're here to inspire and equip you for your best future. Well, I know you're all going to love the guest we have on today, because Sean Page is here, and he is the owner operator of the one and only Chick-fil-A that we have here in Holland, Michigan. So I'm excited to have Sean on today. Sean is married. He's got three young boys. So he is a busy man with a busy life. And Sean, I want to welcome you to Made to Advance.
Thank you, Brian. Very honored that I'm here. Thanks for asking me to be here. Super excited. One thing I got to make sure you know right now.
Yeah.
At Chick-fil-A Holland, we like to say Chick-fil-A Holland.
I got to practice that. Are you serious right now? That's how you do it?
That's what we say. Yeah.
Chick-fil-A Holland.
That's right. Holler.
I gotcha. Well, it's funny because even doing that, are you a Lions fan much or not?
I am. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It was a great year.
It was a great year. And our church's student ministries were all the high school kids were at a house right next to where I live. And I thought, Christina and I are home watching the game last weekend. And I thought they would just get a kick out if I just ran in. I'm dressed head to toe in Lions gear. I run into this house that they're all watching, all these kids are watching the game at. And I just bust through the front door. Nobody knows I'm coming. And I just am screaming top of my lungs, let's go,
let's go.
And I did it. I ran around the whole house. I'm shaking people, hugging people, high five.
Yeah.
After I get home, I'm like, uh-oh, something is not right here. The next day, doubly so. And so now I actually canceled all my meetings yesterday.
Okay.
And haven't talked to anybody but one conversation today, because I'm trying to preserve it so I have a voice for Sunday.
Okay.
So anyway, so I'm going to be careful on my my
for
Holland.
Sure. There you go. That's
so
right.
Now you came in bearing gifts.
That's
and
right.
I can't help but say I'm grateful for that. I wondered if you were going to come with any. So what we've got here is something special. What am I drinking right now?
Well, it's our seasonal beverage, the Mango Passion Tea. It is our sweet tea lemonade with a mango splash.
Okay.
And what do you think?
I think it's fantastic.
All right, awesome.
I think that I would drink a lot of these if I was close to that.
That's right.
If I had your job, it would be very difficult not to be eating and drinking all the time, because so much good food at Chick-fil-A.
Well, to your point, the first year was really difficult because I found myself drinking pop every day.
Yeah.
And I was like, this can't last very long. But I have been eating the food every day.
Is that right?
For 14 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Other than my day off. And I love the food.
So a lot of things on the menu, a lot of options. And of course, things change and come on and off. But what's your favorite go-to?
Yep, good question. It's the classic 8-count nugget with the medium fry.
Is it really?
And a lemonade, fresh squeezed lemonade.
Okay.
I don't get that very often because I do want to make it very special when I have it.
Yeah.
but don't forget, you got to have the Polynesian sauce, which, most of our guests, they love the Chick-fil-A sauce, which I think is an awesome sauce. But I personally love the Polynesian sauce.
I'm going to file that away. I've never had the Polynesian.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's kind of that sweet and sour sweet flavor to it.
Okay. So we've got the big, I don't know if my wife gets it at the grocery, but the big Chick-fil-A squeeze thing. And I mean, we get after it at home.
That's
I'm telling
right.
you what, but it's nothing like having, like being at Chick-fil-A. And,
sure.
And when you do the nuggets, you do them breaded then, you're saying the classic.
That
would
is correct. Yes.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I love the, what's the proper term for the unbreaded nugget?
The grilled nuggets.
The grilled nuggets, yeah. I have to control myself to just exercise discipline to not go down on those grilled nuggets. They're amazing. So, and I tell myself, because they're not breaded, I tell myself they must be quite healthy and all that. And if they're not, I don't want to know. So I don't even want to know. Don't tell me that.
I might be a little biased, but I think we do have some very healthy options.
Yeah. So that's, it's really good to have you here. And it's been fun to watch a little bit of your leadership journey. Obviously, Chick-fil-A opened in 2018.
That's right.
And then my oldest son was one of your first employees.
Yes.
I think He came on pre-opening,
he
right?
He did, yeah. Yes. Yep.
So, and just loved his time at Chick-fil-A and so respected your leadership and appreciated. And I, as a father, appreciated some of the coaching you were speaking in.
Thank you. Let me just say this. You and Christina did a great job raising your kids.
Thanks.
Jared was just an awesome guy, and it was fun to see him grow in his time at Chick-fil-A. And it doesn't happen by chance.
Yeah.
You guys did a great job raising both Jared and Kaylin.
Thanks. Yeah. So Kaylin went right in his footsteps, and she loved working there too. They still have friends that that they met at Chick-fil-A. Yeah. And I don't think Kaylin met her fiance at Chick-fil-A, but they both worked together.
She's got
now Chick-fil-A roots with what will be her husband.
Right.
So I'm telling you what. If you want a great job and perhaps even meet your future spouse.
We call it Chick-fil-ationship.
That's great. Yeah. Chick-fil-ationships. That's there you go, everybody. If you're looking, Sean's your guy and Chick-fil-A's your place. Yeah. So. Well, let's go back. Part of my heart with Made to Advance is I really want to help people figure out what it looks like to move forward in life. Mm. And that's why I spend a disproportionate amount of time just kind of going through bio, not just so, we understand your story and facts of your life, but really so we can kind of hear how you navigated your path to the point you're on. And obviously Chick-fil-A's flourishing, you're flourishing as a leader. And but that didn't come overnight. Mm. And so let's back way up. Where are you from? And just talk a little bit about your background.
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in Jackson, Michigan.
Okay.
Home of the state prison.
I didn't know that.
They also claim home of the Republican Party. A lot of people don't know that. If you look it up online, you won't see that. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of interesting too. But yeah, I grew up there, lived there all my life. Both my parents, they were teachers. So a lot of people always are curious, how did you know about Chick-fil-A? My story starts when I was 6 years old. When I was 6 years old, I knew that someday I wanted to own a Chick-fil-A.
Really?
And so people are like, how did you know about it? Well, it's pretty simple. Both my parents, they were teachers. Every Christmas break, we had off as a family, and we would go down and visit my grandparents who lived in South Carolina, and that's how we came across Chick-fil-A. Fell in love with the brand. I loved the food, loved the service, loved the Christian principles, and knew at some at 6 years of age that I wanted to own a Chick-fil-A. Mm. And so there weren't any Chick-fil-A's in Michigan until, 7 or 8 years ago. So fast forward to when I went to college, I went to a small Christian school, Spring Arbor University. And there I pursued business, business degree. And after that, I pursued Chick-fil-A. And there's a little more to my story. I don't know if you want me to share that now, but when I was a senior in college, I was diagnosed with mixed lineage leukemia. Mm-hmm. And I was given a 6% chance to survive. Mm. And at the time when I got through and got healed, I didn't understand, why am I still here? God, why did you heal me? I truly believed that God healed me, but I didn't know why. And it wasn't until fast forward to when I got selected to own a Chick-fil-A that I realized that God has me here for something more, and it's Chick-fil-A is the vessel that's allowing me to influence and impact lives. And so that's really kind of my story in a nutshell. Wow. Is just the God has me here for a purpose, and it's kind of cool to think that at 6 years of age, He planted this idea to own a Chick-fil-A, which, you know, at 6 years of age, I don't know.
Yeah, it's crazy.
to think about owning a business, come on. I just knew I loved the brand, but...
And when you were six, that was when you first, what was that, 6 years of age where you first walked into that Chick-fil-A?
That's when we first discovered Chick-fil-A at Toledo, Ohio.
And did you know from your first visit, literally, or was it subsequent visits? Or I mean, was it like a love at first sight?
I don't think so, but okay. I know that at that point, that's when I realized, man, this is a brand that I want to be associated with.
How did you, 6 years old... I don't know if you're that familiar with the broader way of thinking, the convictions and all that of the company. I mean, how soon did you come into understanding what Chick-fil-A was about beyond a great experience and the food you enjoyed as a six-year-old?
Yeah, well, I just remember being in the restaurant, hearing Christian music playing over the intercom. Mm. And so that Christian principles piece, we looked into it further and just understood that, man, this is a Christian company, and mm-hmm. I love the brand. They're always busy, and we love the product. And so, that's kind of how we came about that.
Did you do anything when you were then as a kid? I mean, you're not living in a state that has any Chick-fil-A's. Did you do anything to, I mean, obviously you went for a business degree, which I'm assuming was you're keeping Chick-fil-A in mind as your end goal. But did you do anything else as you were growing up with the destination of Chick-fil-A in mind, or just were you a normal kid?
That's a good question. I mean, really, I can't say that I did. Mm-hmm. I just knew that that's what I wanted to be a part of. And so, I can't say that I necessarily did particular things to set me up for this opportunity to work at Chick-fil-A. But I always had that dream. I mean, you ask my wife, first date, I told her I'm going to own a Chick-fil-A. And then you start talking to some of my friends, and it's like, I didn't even realize how much I talked about Chick-fil-A growing up, but people are like, oh yeah, you know, this is the first thing you said is you want to work and own a Chick-fil-A. And so, it was a big part of who I was and what I was pursuing, but I can't sit here and say that like, man, I did this and that to best prepare me for the opportunity.
You know, it's interesting because I really always encourage people to pay attention to their passions. And one of the ways we see our passions reflected is what we naturally like to think about and talk about. Mm-hmm. So, and it's almost always that the people around us will see signs or clues. Now, yours was quite overt as far as, I mean, it's Chick-fil-A, but maybe if you were, I don't know, grilling chicken all the time, and the people go, oh yeah, but in that case, I mean, you were a reflection of your passion was you couldn't help yourself but talk about it because you had that kind of passion and direction. When you were aspiring to someday own a Chick-fil-A, did you know at that point the stats on the odds basically against becoming an owner-operator? You probably know what they are off the top of your head. For every X number of applicants, one person gets chosen. What are those stats?
Well, it's changed a lot. I think I was very fortunate to get in even when I got in because it's gotten that much more difficult to get in. When I pursued Chick-fil-A, I had people I met. So when I worked under an owner in Memphis, Tennessee for 2 years, I sat down with this consultant and said, hey, I'm pursuing the next step for Chick-fil-A. And he basically point blank told me, he said, hey, you understand that the odds are 1 in 40,000, or excuse me, 90 in 40,000 applicants every year, they're selecting 90 applicants. And again, it's just, I think it's that vision that God gave me because nothing was going to set me back. I had this dream and I was going to pursue it and I didn't care what the odds were. Mm-hmm. I was going to go for it. I mean, I guess I beat odds with cancer, mm-hmm. right? And so I was really determined to pursue it. And now what I'm hearing is like 100,000 people are applying every year for this opportunity. And I think they're selecting about 110 people.
Wow.
So it's just really competitive. But I think I just had that vision and that goal and that dream to pursue it. And I was like, nothing's going to hold me back. When I first pursued Chick-fil-A, I applied as an external candidate. Never had restaurant experience. I had leadership experience, but nothing to that degree. And I was able to get an interview. And after the interview, they basically said, hey, thank you, but we're not interested. And I contacted them back. I said, you're making a mistake. Huh. And so they said, well, I'll tell you what, would you consider this route? And I said, absolutely. This is my dream. This is my goal. This is my vision. This is what I want. I'm willing to do whatever it takes. So that opportunity that they presented to me was, hey, go work under an owner for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Learn from him. Get restaurant experience, get Chick-fil-A experience, get leadership experience. Do that for 2 years. Nothing's guaranteed. But after you do that for 2 years, then the next step is you apply for a different program and interview for that. Nothing's guaranteed. And if you get into that, your odds go up as an opportunity to become an owner-operator, but still, nothing's guaranteed. I said, sign me up.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great example all the way around because I love you get the door basically shut in your face initially. Yeah. This is your lifelong dream.
That's right.
And you finally applied, and I'm guessing you put everything you had into that kind of conversation when it came to making yourself an attractive candidate to them.
Yes.
And then to hear the no is just, I just emotionally, I, maybe you're so, were you so caught up in your vision that it really, you're just, you, were you just optimistic it's going to happen no matter what? Or did that feel like, oh, I mean, was this a huge setback moment where you're just calling the universe into question on how this, or was it like, okay, it's a no right now, but I know it's going to be a yes somehow.
Again, it's hard to describe because it when you look back at it, I think it really was God.
Yeah.
Because I felt like this was the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was never concerned. It never really scared me. I played golf growing up. That's one thing I didn't share with you. And the best part of my game was my mental toughness.
Mm-hmm.
I would make a triple bogey and I'd say, okay, and I'd come back and make a birdie on the next hole.
Yeah.
And so I think that just that attitude of, that wit and grit
mm-hmm.
Mentality, that tenacious spirit
mm-hmm.
Has always been in me. And so I think that was part of why I wasn't set back by it, because I was really determined that this is the path that I wanted. But yeah, it's when you look back at it, I think it's more than just that. I think it really is God just and
yeah.
The path that he had for me.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's such a good thing to keep in balance. I think we've got to, and I even struggle as we have this kind of a conversation. I really want folks to, on the one hand, see tenaciousness, see the grit, mm-hmm. see your willingness to say, okay, I didn't get in on my the opportunity or the track that I wanted to, but man, if there's another way in, I'm going to take it. And I'm guessing if they would have said, hey, we don't have any leadership management opportunities, but we do have a custodial job that we'd love to get you into. My guess is you probably would have said, if that's the only way I'm going to get in the door, then get me in, you know, sign me up. And so on the one hand, I think it's great. And we want to emphasize that kind of tenacity and mental toughness, because
mm-hmm.
that's just a whole life kind of a discipline for all of us. And not just at work, obviously.
Right.
I mean, it's just across the board applies. But I think it's great too, and I see what you're doing right, even in this moment, just balancing. There is a sense where God is the driving force and factor over
sure.
all of it. And so we want to acknowledge, I like to put it, you know, sometimes I like to say, when it comes to our effort, we've got to put in all this effort, we've got to put in all this intentionality and grit and all this, and that's our little bitty piece of the puzzle,
yeah.
our part of the equation. And then just the rest is the power and sovereignty of God and
100%.
Making things happen.
Yeah, I think we have choice.
Mm-hmm.
God has given us choice and direction. And so there's that divine piece, but there's also that piece where, hey, you've got to take the bull by the horns mm-hmm. and you've got to do something about it.
So let's go back to college. You're sitting here, it was a senior year in college, right?
Yes, that's right.
So you have leukemia and 6% chance to live. You get a mm-hmm. bone marrow transplant.
Right.
What do you think, you already spoke to this a little bit with just the sense of purpose that came out of that
yeah.
time while you were suffering in that way. And that's a difficult journey. And we haven't been through your kind of cancer, but my wife went through cancer and it's tough. I mean, you mm-hmm. start asking some questions you've
sure.
never asked before.
Right.
How did that shape you at the time? How did you process at the time? Were you already mature enough that you were seeing what God is doing in your heart and life through this? Or was there despair? Was there spiritual doubt? What was that time like?
Yeah. Well, so I grew up a believer. Both my parents were believers. And so I grew up in a Christian household. I would kind of say that growing up, I was lukewarm Christian. I mean, I wasn't on fire. I did all the right things. In fact, I didn't rebel. I didn't do anything bad, but I just wasn't on fire. And that moment of facing death was really a moment in my life that took my faith to a whole new level and just really grew me spiritually. And again, not to say that every day is perfect as a believer in Christ. It's a journey and you have ups and downs. But that moment in life when I was facing cancer was really when it just took my faith to a new level, and I really haven't looked back since then. So
wow.
I think that was a defining moment for me. And you know, I did have this a strange this peace in that moment, and it was hard to describe. But looking back, it was the Holy Spirit that was just there with me and gave me that comfort and peace.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think my wife experienced a very similar thing. I mean, we had some hard days to be sure,
mm-hmm.
but it's just a great witness to hear people say, we can go through suffering as Christ followers.
Right.
And all of these promises that somebody like me preaches about,
yep.
I mean, they really can be proven true on the ground when you're going through something. And this is not just pie in the sky stuff. It's not just Christian cliches. Right. I mean, this is you as a college student. You're not, you know, you haven't even been, honestly, following Jesus that long, all things considered, right. and still you were able to experience a measure of peace. Now, when you think of the legacy of that whole journey and how it affects you today, and again, you spoke to this a little bit with the purpose thing, but when you came out of that, how do you view that experience as far as how it left a lasting impact on you today?
I think I sometimes annoy my wife because I'm the kind of guy that likes to seize the day. And so I'm all about what's next. What can we do today? I really enjoy not just sitting back and I like to do a lot of things. I don't know how I would answer that, but I think that I will say this. When I think about that time, there's three things that got me through. It was God. I believe God healed me. I had an incredible support system, mm-hmm. Family and friends. And then that mental toughness that I talked about with the golf, I took that to the next level in dealing with that cancer. And I believe my attitude and my approach in that really was good. And so I think that those things I still carry today just in life. When you think about going through those challenging times, even as a leader in your business, looking to God, right? And then looking for your support system, mm-hmm. and then just that mental toughness of knowing that sometimes the work that I'm in can be really tough, but it's a season, and having that tenacious spirit and pushing through, I think goes a long ways.
Yeah, that's so good. And I just love to encourage really anyone, but especially leaders, just not to be lone rangers.
That's right.
I think this, because this is the thing, the tenacity and that single-minded vision cuts mm-hmm. both ways, because on the one hand, it can make us so, this is where I'm going, and it doesn't matter, you know, I'm going there whether anybody comes along or not, like this is where I'm headed.
Right.
And the sort of the shadow side of that is, I don't have deep and meaningful relationships. I don't have deep and meaningful community because I've got a goal and I'm going to pursue it. And so I love that point. And it's cool to hear even through, I mean, that's college age, but even to current, that you've kept your faith vibrant. You've kept your community robust so that even as a leader today, you're living out of that place.
I mean, you know, just a practical example, sometimes being the boss or the top owner of a business, you can feel alone, right? And you shouldn't. But sometimes you go through certain things that only you feel. And so I have an accountability group of other Chick-fil-A owner operators that we meet once a month. And there's four of us, West Michigan owner operators. And we just connect and we talk about personal and professional. And just really try to sharpen each other in both aspects.
That's really cool. What a great example. Yeah. Well, let me ask you about your back to your journey as being an owner operator. What do you feel like? So you did the time in, say, what is Memphis initially, and then Iowa, right?
Yeah.
When you think of the things that you needed to grow in to prepare you for where you're at today. And in that middle stage, you were an owner. You weren't an owner, you were an operator, right? Because those were corporate-owned stores, I think. Is that right?
So I worked for corporate-owned stores for 1 year before I got selected to be an operator. When I was in Iowa for 5 years as an owner there, and then I was coming up on 6 years.
What do you feel like the kinds of things you needed to take away from that journey were to prepare you for where you're at today with the store you're in?
Yeah. Well, that's a loaded question. It's a good question. I think as a leader, there's a quote that I often think about that really is a great way to think about just leadership in general. And it's, your capacity to grow determines your capacity to lead. Mm. And I love that quote because I think that really sums up leadership in general. Is like, if you're willing to grow yourself, right? So this podcast you're putting on, I mean, I know we got a lot of great listeners are listening. They're hungry, right? It says something. And I think that's a great example of like my journey. When I look back at Sean as an owner operator 11 years ago, when I first got selected, Chick-fil-A, they were betting on me, not in that moment, but for the future, if that makes sense. Because I didn't know what I was doing at that time. I had so much to learn. I was a terrible operator the first couple of years. And I learned a lot, though, but they were betting on my capacity and my willingness to grow. And that was something that I learned quickly is the importance of growing yourself. Reading books, podcasts. I have professional and personal mentors that I interact with. I mean, all those different components are so important in my growth and journey as a leader. When I look back then and look back where I'm at today, I've evolved. I've come a long ways, right? And that's the journey of a leader. One thing, you know, you hear methods are many. Principles are few. Methods always change. Principles never do. And I think that's probably the one thing I would say when you think about the journey of a leader, your methods are going to change. And they've changed for me in many ways. But one thing that I try to stay true to is my values and my principles and just leading consistently in that regards.
Yeah. So with knowing all the different mentors and kind of, I would say, inputs that you had as a leader and as a man, Chick-fil-A people love to talk about the culture and training and all these different things. Imagine if you can, and this is a major thought experiment. Imagine Sean Page goes into one company and you're already a growth-minded individual. You're hungry. You're all that. So that's just obviously even going back to sports. That's how God made you.
Sure.
Imagine now that you are in a different company versus Chick-fil-A. What would you say specifically about Chick-fil-A's culture or the Chick-fil-A experience has changed you as a man or as a leader? You go, you know, this is just a Chick-fil-A thing. And of course, we don't know what it would have been like if you were in some other company. But you look at it and you go, yeah, this is definitely, I'm different because of the impact of the organization.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it boils down to this. I've been with Chick-fil-A for coming up on 14 years, again, 11 years as an operator. The thing that I have seen stay true is the principles. Chick-fil-A has been in the spotlight, good and bad. And internally, what I see is the same company 14 years ago as they are today. Have they changed? Has there been changes of ways of doing things? Absolutely. But our corporate purpose to glorify God by being a faithful steward in all that's entrusted to us, to have a positive impact in all that we come in contact with. That's the corporate purpose.
Yeah.
And that is the one thing that I have seen stay constant in all 14 years I've been with Chick-fil-A. And I think that is what makes the culture so strong and so true.
Wow. And you can't help but I would think, even if you came in with saying your calling is to glorify God apart from Chick-fil-A, my guess is just being in that environment with so many like-minded people.
That's right.
It refines, it hones, it reinforces that same passion. So you've got a lot of other operators and leaders saying, "Oh yeah, that's right." We're all humans.
That's
so
right.
you're in a role where it's also there's financial reward, there's other incentives that are great incentives. Nothing wrong with those things, but we know the human heart can start drifting towards, "Wow, the money is great, or the other perks are great." And so to be in an environment that sort of keeps your true north on,
that's right,
we're about glorifying God is got to be a great thing. Now, none of us kind of get the behind the scenes of what it means to, you know, be an operator of a Chick-fil-A. Mm-hmm. We get the other side of it, which is really fun to be in. When you think of, you've got a lot of years now as an operator and as an owner, what gives you the most joy about what you do? Now, I'm going to ask the flip side question in a minute as well.
Sure.
But when you think about what just gives you the most joy about your role as an owner-operator, what is it?
Well, there's probably a couple things, but the simplest way to say it is just seeing people grow. and seeing their lives changed for the good. I love when I see, and we have some examples of this where we have someone that starts off as a part-time team member, and they are hungry and coachable, and they grow with us. And I've had a few examples where they have grown to the point where they've been a top leader of mine. I had one employee, she's back in Iowa now, but she was with me for 7 years. She moved with me from Iowa to here, and she was a part-time team member that started off. So I love seeing people grow. I've had an assistant director tell me, you know, I didn't know what I was capable of until I started working at Chick-fil-A, and you guys pushed me and stretched me in a good way. And wow. So to me, that's what it's all about, is the impact that we can make on people's lives. The other thing that I would say, and this is maybe a little different than the people side, is just the pursuit of excellence. I have a high standard of excellence, sometimes maybe a little too much. but just to know that we're pursuing the excellence and trying to get better today than we were yesterday.
Yeah.
And like asking questions of what do we need to do today to make us better for tomorrow, and getting strategic and making changes and things like that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what your Enneagram is? Do you know it by chance?
Yeah. So I did take that test, and I'm trying to remember what it was. What's the number 7? Do you know off the top of your head?
I feel like the 7 and all the Enneagram people out there who are, if I get the strong, I feel like that's not the life of the party person, is it?
That's what it was. Okay. So, and then what's a 3? A 3 is like the driver.
3 is they want to win.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's Jared. My son is a 3.
So I know more of the DISC profile.
Yeah, sure. DI, I'm guessing, is what you are.
And so I'm a ID.
ID. Okay. ID. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Well, the reason why I ask is because I am a 1 on Enneagram, which is, they call it perfectionist.
Yeah, yeah.
I like to call it, there's another term, which is reformer, but it's that, to me, that joy of making things better.
Sure.
It'll never be perfect. That's I understand right. that, but the sheer joy of just growth and improvement and what's next and how can we do better. You know, what's one thing that's so cool too, I think about the atmosphere you've created at Chick-fil-A is here is my son who, you know, Jared's always thinking, how do we improve, all this. And he would talk about, he would pitch ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, he's a teenage kid.
Yeah, right.
Well, he shouldn't even be pitching ideas. Yeah. And you guys would say, you know what, that's Let's a good idea,
it.
We'll do it.
Let's do it.
And then there'd be times where he would say, Dad, and this was a good growth journey for Jared, other people would pitch an idea. And he said to me, this happened on 2 or 3 different occasions. He said, Dad, I had that same idea a year ago. Okay. And I didn't say it.
Yeah.
Because I thought, you know, I'm just a kid.
Sure.
Who am I to say it?
Yeah.
And then he said, I saw them say it. I thought, doggone it. Why didn't I have some more confidence and say it? And I think it says a lot though, about the atmosphere at Chick-fil-A.
That's awesome.
That you've created that. Yeah. I don't want to miss that one point you made about the people that you're looking for. You see a hunger to, and a kind of a drive in a sense, and a teachability.
Yep.
And those two character traits are really, really important.
100%.
If somebody's going to go somewhere.
I will say this to anybody, you know, I will take effort over talent all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Because that effort is going to supersede or go past the talent eventually, because they're coachable and hungry.
Yeah, that's so good. Such a good, I mean, for anybody listening right now, if you think you're going to coast on talent,
that's right,
you are going to hit a lid.
Yep.
And you might right now look like a star, but a day's coming where the person who's just going to grind
100%
is going to run right past you.
That's exactly right.
And you know, the tough thing is, coast or living off of talent doesn't take as much character, I think, because it's natural, it's fun, I'm great. The idea that I'm going to work hard and grind, that's an inside thing.
That's right.
And you know, and I think some are natural folks who grind a little bit. You know, it's just part of who they are. I think Jared again, he was a grind kid.
I was going to say Jared had both.
Yeah,
he had talent and he had the effort.
Yeah, it's a good combination.
He's going to do big things in life.
I'm excited to see where he goes. Yeah. Now we talked about some of the good things, and I think it's awesome to think about developing people. And I always coach our marketplace leaders, like no matter what you're. I get we got to make a profit at the end of the day, right. But just remember, you know, it's to develop people and build into people, and you do that, you can't lose. Mm-hmm. What are some of the tough things about running a Chick-fil-A? It's good for people who have aspirations to do important things, to be influencers and all that, to know it's not all just, you know, chicken sandwiches and fun conversations with great hungry people. I mean, there are some tough things when you're building something that matters. So to talk to us a little bit about some of that dynamic of being a leader.
Yeah. I think owning a business in general, it's hard to turn it off. So you're home and your business is still running, or you're just constantly thinking, what's next? And what's the next move? What are we doing? So that can be tough. I've gotten really good at it, but I'm still don't have it mastered. Mm-hmm. And I think that can be really tough because I love what I do.
Yeah.
Right. And so it doesn't feel like I'm working, but I need to be careful because my family is very important to me. And I want to make sure I'm present when I'm home. And so I think that's difficult. The other thing that I would say it can be very difficult in this role is when you do spend so much time and energy and intentionality with individuals to build and grow, and then they let you down. Mm. And that can be crushing, whether they leave because of whatever or they make poor choices. And it's like, man, that to me is really difficult.
I don't know if you would feel comfortable doing so, but would you feel comfortable telling any particular story or something like a journey you had to walk through with someone?
Without going into too many details, just poor choices.
Yeah.
And, with those poor choices, I will say this, Brian, one thing that I have learned in my role and capacity is I believe in second chances. I believe, one question that I always like to ask is, what would Jesus do mm-hmm. in this situation? Mm-hmm. If he was in my shoes as the owner of a business, what would he do? And I don't think every single time warrants a second chance. I mean, there might be a really bad thing that happened where it's time to say goodbye. But generally speaking, I think you can give someone a second chance. And so in that situation, we talked about it and we said, hey, look, here's where we're at. You have two options here. And my one option that I was wanting to explore was let's continue working here. And it's an uphill battle and it's going to be difficult and I can only take you so far. But let's pursue this together, and I will come alongside and support you and help you, or it's time to say goodbye. And in this scenario, they didn't want to put in the effort and mm-hmm. the work that they would have had to have done to rebuild some relationships, and so they chose to leave. And so that was tough. That was tough.
That's what I think. Most leaders I know, if you asked what's one of the biggest joys, they would say it's the people. Mm-hmm. And if you say what's one of the most, the biggest challenges, it's the people.
I'll always say that.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, it's a fascinating thing. I think that to me, a particularly great Christian business owners, you're business owner, but you could sneak in the title pastor a little bit because if you have legitimate care for people, if somebody asks me the same question, they say what's the hardest part of ministry, I would say exactly what you just said.
Sure.
It's you invest in people, you believe in them. Mm-hmm. And the problem is I can't want the change for them more
That's
than
right.
they want it.
Yep.
And it's painful to yep. watch, and it's painful for them. And it's painful, even as a person who's then invested in them.
Absolutely.
You thought, oh man, that's, now when you experience something like that, are you the kind of person, back to the like grit resilience thing, that you can just go, well, all right, I guess they chose to go that way, and I, that's the way it is. Or is that like, do you feel deflated? Is there a process you have to go through to kind of find your emotional wherewithal again? Or is it just like,
that's a good question. I would say there's times where I have both, but simply put, I will say this, and I truly believe this. I have seen time over time where God has been faithful. And I think, again, the North Star, if we keep our eyes on him, and that's what I tell my leaders, through the good and bad, and we give him the praise and the glory, and we lean on him and trust in him, he always provides. And so I, even in those moments where I'm not saying it feels good or, you know, I don't have those feelings. I do. Yeah, I do. I feel hurt and different feelings, but I can move past on that somewhat quickly, knowing that I have always seen God show up.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that. And I've seen that time over time.
Yeah. Well, and that's where I think your longevity as a leader really starts to pay off for you for the long haul, because at least for me, some of the early setbacks I experienced, you have a financial setback or you have a team setback or whatever. And initially, I, again, speaking for myself, there were some moments where I felt like the world just felt like it was crumbling. Well, you get through it and you see God faithful through it. That's and you realize, oh, you know what? He really will be faithful. And then the next time around, I don't want to say it's easy. It's easier though, because I'm applying lessons from the past.
That's right.
Let's stick on that theme a little bit of just how faith affects your own leadership journey. Mm-hmm. You've already spoken to a couple things, because I think, you know, one, purpose to glorify God. Secondly, that idea that you're really, and I've heard you say this, you didn't say it yet today, but you've said, I'm not in the chicken business or chicken sandwich business. I'm in the people
that's
business.
Right.
So you've got that second, that's, you know, obviously really right out of the heart of the Gospels, Jesus saying, what it means to be great is to serve people. So that part of developing, walking with people, any other ways that you think about your faith, affecting how you do what you do or the energy with which you do it?
Yeah. Well, again, not to beat a dead horse here, but what I will say is this, with those first couple of years, I told you earlier that I was a terrible operator. It's because I was trying to do it all by myself.
Hmm.
Right. And what I mean by that is I had leaders with me, but, I wasn't surrendering to God. And there was a moment that it all came together. It was actually my wife in talking to her, and she challenged me and said, Sean, well, have you truly given this to God? And that was the aha moment for me as a leader that I realized, oh my goodness, I haven't. And so from that moment on, again, not saying every day is great and easy, but I try to surrender daily
mm-hmm.
to him and say, Lord, this is your business. Use me, give me discernment, help me to lead well. And to me, that has been the number one game changer in how I lead my business. Again, not saying that I don't have moments of anxiousness or different things like that.
Sure.
But in general, I go to bed pretty well,
mm-hmm.
Knowing that God's got me.
Yeah. Boy, that's so good. That's so good. And for so many, even if they're not business owners, it could be with their kids. I think 100%. Of sometimes when kids are growing up and you see your kids and at times you go, I would love for them to be in a slightly different place than what they are. And I see some parents, getting into hyper control mode.
Yes.
With that control instinct comes anxiety.
Right.
And so now they're anxious, they're controlling. That obviously affects their parenting and their relationship with their kids. And I think for whether it be business, family, et cetera, that sense of release that says, God, you have got this. This is your thing.
That's right.
I'm going to be faithful and I'm going to keep giving it in a sense back to you every day. When it comes to, you know, even reflecting on your career to date at Chick-fil-A, if you were thinking in one of those moments where it's like a Sunday, since you know, you've got some time to maybe pause a little bit more, and you were thinking of the thing, one or two things that you are most proud of, and I don't mean on a general level, I mean like the things that you go, of all the different things I've done, people I've spent time with, what are those one or two things that you would say, that's what I'm most proud of? And I don't mean proud in a, oh, look at me,
mm-hmm.
but proud of in a, thank you, Lord, that I could do that. That is so, so deeply meaningful to my heart as a leader.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I think the one thing, so my vision internally at Chick-fil-A is I want Chick-fil-A Holland to be a place where everybody loves their job and everybody feels like they belong. And again, not saying that we're perfect here, but one thing that we've done is we've really maintained and created this culture where I believe our team truly does love coming to Chick-fil-A. We're committed to working through any problem because they're, you know, with people, you have problems.
And lots of young people to boot. So it's
so we're committed to working through that. We deal with it head on pretty quickly. And that's just something that I don't think you get everywhere, is this place where we know that we're going to respect each other and treat each other with honor and dignity. And that's something that I'm very grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
And in regards to a business decision that we've made, something that we did what I would call a strategic move about 2 years ago, is we devoted one lane to mobile for drive-thru. And that was, at that time, there's a lot of opposition. And
from
everybody, even internally, there's some people that are like, why are we doing this? Partially because we did have guests that didn't understand it,
mm-hmm.
and they were kind of frustrated. And, you know, we hate upsetting guests, but we were thinking not just today, but what the future looks like. And it was actually 6 to 8 months of growing pains.
Wow.
Where we actually saw sales decline. We saw our transactions decline. We saw our guest scores decline. Everything was saying, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Right? And I believed in it, and I thought that this was the right move. I said, let's give it some time. Let's push through. Let's see it through. And today, you know, we're still, that's an area that we're still pushing to grow. But we're seeing during the peak period, which I would argue and say that's probably when you need it the most, is sometimes half of our transactions are mobile. But when you look at the line, it doesn't feel that way because it takes 6 seconds to scan your app, whereas it takes 60 seconds for our order takers to take an order.
Wow.
So we're able to get 10 more cars through as it does one order taker. And so it's been a huge move that we've made.
Yeah.
And we look forward to seeing what the future looks like.
At what point, anytime a leader is leading and you're doing something new that's unproven, you're watching the data is not saying, hey, good job. You have to ask, are we gonna at some point have to kill this?
Right.
Or is this just a keep on keeping on? And that's one of those tough places as a leader, because there is no playbook, there's no magic standard,
that's
et cetera.
Right.
You said you were 8 months in and it was still pretty negative
eight
numbers.
8 months is kind of when it started stick.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's just a good, again, a good file away. When do you think, let's say the numbers had kept going the direction they were going in a discouraging way.
Right.
At what point do you go, okay, we've got to maybe rethink this.
Yeah. Well, again, if you talk to a lot of people, they probably said you're crazy for staying with it for 8 months.
Yeah.
It's obviously easy to say it now because it's stuck, but I would like to say a year is what we would have given it, because I really did believe it. You know, you have to look at your area too. You know, the guests, do they use their app? And you could argue and say maybe not. And I would say a year probably would have been it. But I think that there's an application here about leadership in that vision of like, hey, here's the vision. I believe in it. And you've just got to keep pressing on.
Yeah.
Even when as a leader, you might have naysayers saying you're crazy.
Right.
If you believe in it, I would just challenge anybody to like stay with it.
Yeah. Well, and I think the more progressive the idea, obviously, the harsher the opposition is going to be on the front end and require even the more perseverance. So really cool example. And I think the other thing you see with that particular example is not just that you stayed with it, but recognizing that new idea, it may be that it is, and it was a financial cost.
Yes.
I mean, for a good long while,
That's
you were literally giving dollar bills to that perspective idea, you didn't know if there'd be a return on it.
That's exactly right.
And sometimes we have to make peace with advancement is just going to cost us. And sometimes you try something and it costs you a ton of money or time or whatever, and you get to the year mark and you go, we learned and it didn't work. And
that's exactly right.
And that's part of being a leader and living life too. I think, and I'm sure you'd agree with this, we got to be willing to continue to embrace risk.
100%. That's well said. I'll give you another example. You may or may not know this, but on Wednesdays right now, we're giving away free breakfast.
I didn't know that.
Every morning, it's a free breakfast entree. And we haven't come out and said how long we're going to do this, but we're pretty much committed to doing it for this year. And I had a team member, she asked a question. She said, Sean, how are we making money on this? And I was like, wow, you know, I love that she's curious and asking that question. Yeah. I said, you know what? We're really not. But what we're doing is we're building tomorrow. So is it a cost or is it an investment, right? And so we see it as an investment, knowing that it's going to pay off dividends down the road.
Yeah, that's so good. When you're thinking about kind of growing with where, I mean, that might be the example you'd want to give to this question. But when you think of where you're trying to take your business right now, what kinds of things do you hope for? You're running a great operation, so many good things to celebrate. Where do you go, kind of a thing? I mean, do you have things on your radar right now?
Yeah. Well, we still come back to the basics, right? As a guest, what do you expect when you go to a restaurant? You want the food to be hot and fresh, right? You want it to be served fast. You want friendly employees, and you also want a clean environment, and you want it to be accurate. That's the five core that we are striving for. Mm-hmm. And I think we do it well, but can we do it better? Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's what we're pushing for. We believe that the best marketing is just the pure execution of the experience.
Yeah.
Right. If you can execute it well, you're going to have guests coming back more often. And that's what we're striving for. We want guests to come back, and we also want them to go out and tell others about their experience. And so that's a big part of what we're doing. The second thing that we're really pushing, I've already said this, but the mobile. We believe that's the future. Guests love it. We just got to get more guests to try it, because once they try it, they don't go away from it. Mm-hmm. It's a great experience. Another thing is not just it's faster for the guest, but we send a lot of free offers on the app. And so not only do you get to use the app for a better experience and earn points, but we also send a lot of free stuff out. And so that mobile app is something that we're really pushing for. We want to see more of that.
We love the mobile app. Okay, so I think you're right. You're pressing against a hard thing, because human behavior sometimes is so ingrained.
Yes, right.
We've been doing a drive-through thing a certain way.
Right.
And even the evolution that Chick-fil-A has taken with getting team members out in the parking lot and, you know, helping expedite things. All that is, but it's still that, even then, you're still going through a faster version of the traditional method.
Right.
And so you're pushing uphill to say, okay, no, we're going to kind of reinvent this where the whole thing's taken care of. But man, this feeling of satisfaction, it's like being a TSA pre-check person.
Okay.
Not to say it's about being able to cut everybody, but you see these long lines.
Yeah, right.
And then you're a mobile order and you're like,
that's right.
Zoop, yeah. And, that is a very rewarding experience. Yeah. That's what I feel every time I'm at the airport.
That's
when
good.
I'm in my pre-check line and I watch lines of people waiting. So
yeah, that's awesome.
How does it work? What's the tension with, or how does it navigate it between the freedom for you as an operator to innovate, to figure out new things, and corporate? Of course, with franchise models, you expect in most cases, it's like, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
And it does seem like you've got a fair bit of freedom to try some things, but how does all that give and take work?
Yeah, that's a good question. In a nutshell, there are definitely parameters that we have to operate within, operating standards, if you will. I can't go and create my own menu item to put on the menu, mm-hmm. right? Chick-fil-A says what we can and cannot. They tell us pricing, what we can and cannot. So uniforms, can and cannot. There's different things that we can and cannot do. But when it comes to growing your business, there's complete autonomy, I feel like. They give us so much autonomy and just really owning the business. I mean, you know, really running the business and making decisions. I can build my team how I want to. I can have the leadership hierarchy how I want to. It really a lot of autonomy when it comes to running my business, which obviously is one of the reasons why 100,000 people want the opportunity, mm-hmm. because that entrepreneurial side is a piece, again, that that I do love. I love, sometimes I think my title should be CPS, Chief Problem Solver. Mm. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you're always trying to solve a problem that's going to have a breakthrough to help us create a better experience.
Right.
You know, and that's the stuff that I love getting to do. And obviously doing it through your people, because as you grow the business, right, you can't do it all. You've got to have a team. And I'm just very blessed. We have an awesome team that has really helped us shape the direction that we're going. And so you can't do it alone, right? You got to have a team under you. You got to build a team under you and continue to grow a team to continue to go forward in the direction you're going.
And it's so cool when I go through, or we don't go in honestly that much anymore, but when we're going through the line to see some of those team members that have been with you for a while, it's so cool to think, my gosh, you're still here, faithful. And that says a lot about culture, because I don't know what the exact stats are, even with management turnover, but I know Chick-fil-A exceeds employee retention stats pretty much across the board relative to competitors. When you go to a Chick-fil-A, sometimes I'm going around, you know, and I'll see this one's got the big overhang and this one's got fans and, you know, outside, and this one's got, is that all on the operator on if you want to change your facility and you that's a big capital investment, which part of the Chick-fil-A proposition on the front end is that they put the capital in. Right. So then how does that work?
Are you trying to push my button right now?
No, that's just a pure question. I've always wondered that. Anytime I have somebody on that's got like an area of expertise that I go, I've always wondered that. I file that question away and I'm like, this is my moment to ask it.
Well, simply put, we were one of the first Chick-fil-A's in Michigan to qualify for a canopy, is what you're talking about, outside, which is a huge, huge, huge thing for my team, right? We go out, we're committed to going outside in the elements, and we do that for our guests. Mm-hmm. Our guests are our number one priority of why we're here. We're here to impact them and serve them in the best that we can. But we qualified for that really basically in 2020. But we had some challenges with the township. But I am here to say that I'm very grateful for the township, because through some conversations and different things, we were able to work it out where they approved our canopy. So we actually have a canopy coming in late March, early
April. Come on. All right.
And so it's been a long time coming. It's a huge win for the team, because we go out there when it's sprinkling down a little bit, and when it's snowing a little bit. And so even with the sun, right? Mm-hmm. So just to have protection for the team, I'm so grateful. Chick-fil-A, to answer your question though, part of the deal is as a franchisee, I don't have to pay a dime.
Wow.
Just absolutely incredible. And again, that's that partnership between corporate and Chick-fil-A. And really, if you want to talk about the franchise model and what makes Chick-fil-A so successful, I do believe one of the things is the way they have it set up, where we truly have incredible support from corporate that will reinvest into our restaurants, and you know that staying relevant, right? I think is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to most restaurants, we get a refresh every 7 years.
No kidding.
Where they will come in and refresh us, and same thing. That's I don't pay a dime on that.
Wow.
And so just really grateful for the partnership with Chick-fil-A. They are an incredible organization. Obviously, I'm very biased. But,
you should be.
But I don't think there's a better company to work for.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready on Sunday to go down to Florida, where they invite all of the operators, their spouses. They invite all the staff, their spouses, together, and they bring these top-renowned leaders to come and speak on leadership topics. They do it every year. 1 year, they rented out two Royal Caribbean cruise ships.
No kidding.
And it was just Chick-fil-A people. Uh-huh. And so it's just an incredible company that really cares for me. And what I would say is through that care, it makes me want to care for my team more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great, they're really setting the pace, setting 100%. The tone on care, and you guys yes. then can live that out, what you're seeing modeled for you
that's
from
right.
top down. So I, you know, just to forgive me for obsessing here over the canopy example, yeah. but you said you qualified for one.
Right.
So there are certain, so corporate has, because that's the funny thing, these buildings, you're like, how many different iterations can you have? Well, if these guys have the door and yeah. these guys have the, so there are these different options, we could say. And there is some set of qualifications
right.
that then you, the operator, basically have to make a pitch of, hey, you're obviously they communicate what the qualifications are. Then you're making the pitch or making the case.
Yep.
We meet those and then they give approval. Is that kind of the gist of how it works?
Yeah. So if I can brag on my team for a moment, there was one point that our restaurant, there's a ranking that Chick-fil-A puts out for drive-through performance. And Jared may have been, it was probably, I'm trying to remember, it may have been Jared still here, but at one point we were number 12 in the chain for drive-through.
Wow.
And so when they came out with the Canopy project where they're going to invest in current restaurants and put them in, because they were starting to build the new ones with it already. So now they're going back and looking at all the current restaurants. They basically took the first 100 drive-through restaurants and they're going to put them in there.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So cool to brag on your team that way, because yeah. it really is the team at that point. I mean, you're 100%. Helping coach and build in, but number 12 out of how many?
Well, again, it's dry. At the time, there's 2,500 Chick-fil-A's.
Yeah.
I don't know how many freestanding versus malls. I can't sure. tell you that number. But there's 2,500 Chick-fil-A's.
Yeah, that's incredible. That says so much about the team, which is yeah. awesome. And ultimately, the team says a lot about your leadership. Well, I really appreciate having this conversation, Sean. I know it's going to encourage a lot of people. And what you have talked about today is really what I've seen now in not one but two kids' lives. I remember the biggest to me point of clarity on that you're walking your talk when it comes to developing mm-hmm. people was when Jared came home. And it's so funny because of course he's a great-hearted guy. He's a hard worker, cares about people, all of that. But doggone it, if he isn't the most serious-faced person ever when he's, I mean, just kind of that outward side of things.
Yeah.
And so I remember one day, and I had said to him before, Jared, you kind of look like you're mad sometimes, you know, when I know you're not mad at anybody, yeah. but you just look that way. And this is where parenting in some ways is a team sport, because sure. He said, yeah, Dad, whatever, you know, and it was not a whole lot of yeah. traction on that, right. on that coaching point from Dad. And then one time I see him smiling at Chick-fil-A. And I asked him later, I said, Jared, boy, you seem like you're in a really good mood. And he said, I was just normal. And I said, well, you're just smiling. He goes, well, Sean pulled me aside and he said some really encouraging, affirming things to me. And then he just said, but Jared, I just need you to smile more.
That's great.
And I know, I know like a smile isn't this maybe revolutionary point of coaching, but honestly, so much of getting places in life is how you treat people. It's interpersonal skills. Again, you know, back to these soft side things like work ethic
yeah.
that are not, I'm the fastest whatever in the world. I will work. And again, part of that's how you treat people.
That's
and
right.
smiling is part of how you treat people.
Yes.
And that, kid you not, that was a definitive change for him. But then he grew in, again, so many other ways
right.
after that point with, knowing his voice mattered,
yep.
Hearing your speaking affirmation to him at times, mm-hmm. being willing to coach him at times, giving him opportunities. He would come home at times and tell me conversations he was part of and even some conflict resolution
sure.
stuff.
Yep.
I'm like, the kid's in high school and
right.
he is doing grown-up conflict
yeah.
resolution.
Yep.
People in their 40s and 50s struggle with that stuff. They're learning it at Chick-fil-A.
And that's what I love about what we get to do is we employ, I mean, really 60% of our employees are high school kids, but we give them real responsibility
mm-hmm.
and help them grow. And that's what it's all about.
It's cool. Well, Sean, thanks for being here today. And thanks for being such
a
gift to our community. Your leadership is stellar.
Thanks for all you do as well.
Yeah. Thank you. I'll keep cheering you on.
Thank you.
We love eating at Chick-fil-A and even more than that, just being inspired by the culture and the team that you've built. So thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
What a great conversation with Sean Page. I love his heart to invest in people. And that was one of the first things Sean told me when I met him. He said, Brian, I'm not in the chicken business. I'm in the people development business. And I've seen that in the life of my kids and so many others. And I want you to know that no matter what sphere you work in, or even if you're a full-time stay-at-home parent, just know when you invest in people, you can't lose. People are the best investment that you can make. Now, I hope that you would rate and review our podcast. That helps us get the word out about what we're doing here at Made to Advance. This has been a production of Engedi Church. We've got more incredible conversations on the way. Please follow us on social media. But until next time, just know that you were made to advance.